T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Mornings with Chad, Joe, and Lo on 95.7 The Game.
7:01, Chad, Joe, and Lo. Thanks for your time on a Wednesday. Susan Slusser is going to join us at 7:30, and we're going to tell you about a big problem potentially for the 49ers in just a moment. But Anna, did you get something from the 415?
Yeah, really interesting from the PenskeAutoSales.com text line from the 415. Did Lo really just leave me a voicemail about investing in pigs?
That's true.
I did. I had
to.
Mm-hmm.
Joe heard that.
What was his name? Jason?
Yeah, Jason. What's happening, brother? Man,
Joe. He was hating on Lo'Neal, and every now and again, Lo'Neal's going to find a number on the text line, and he'll actually give you a shout from a blocked number, so you won't be able to holler back. But.
Now, you're actually going to do that, right?
Yeah, I told him, hey.
Are you full-blown with the pig farming?
Absolutely, man. Dude, I was this weekend, man, I was hanging sheetrock, friggin' working on lease line Sunday for a church. I'm getting up. I had to drive down to Lemoore. Had a sewer backup, had to get freaking a shovel, dig a little lease line.
That's Lamar.
Get a snake. You got a little electric snake. You put it inside the lease line. You let it.
All right. All right.
No, I'm just telling. I do this kind of work. I'm a hard worker.
You can just say the sewer's backed up. I don't need to hear how the sausage is made, all right?
I thought you said you want more discussions. Just a couple seconds.
Sports.
Ago.
I want more discussions
right. That
are off-air, that are non-sports related.
That's
kind of in sports talk radio.
I
can't come in here and talk about outside lands this weekend.
Ordinary, average low, just doing manual labor on the weekends.
I'm just a guy.
I'm just a
guy with a huge bank account, collection of nice cars.
Pigs, I snake pipes. I do
real
everything.
Estate empire.
Anna, I love you. Can I get some help? Can I get some help, Anna?
You're going to need to work at this.
Oh
after
God.
The last segment.
With that said,
you
bashed her
earlier, so she's not going
to
have
I would
back.
Like to come down and check out the pigs sometime.
Oh, absolutely.
They're good animals.
You'll love them.
Yeah. 7:03, Chad, Joe, Lo, 95.7 The Game. Big news out of the NFL.
You can eat those, just letting you know. It's okay to eat pigs.
Swine?
Yeah. Instead of people. Anyways, go ahead.
Thanks.
Probably more acceptable.
Very similar anatomy, by the way, apparently. Pigs and humans.
I appreciate the insight, ladies and gentlemen.
That's why they use them in medical school.
See what you've done, Lo? You've corrupted Anna. Now she's in cahoots with you.
No, she's right. Anna's
Chad,
right.
You can kill pigs, not people. Eat the pigs. The swine's better anyways. Thanks. Thanks for the little heads up.
From a sports perspective, though.
Yes.
I think you have a really nice story that's coming up.
Yes. The Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, signs a new deal with the Cardinals, making him the highest paid safety in the NFL. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, the deal is worth $62.5 million over 5 years and includes $40 million in guaranteed money.
Is the best sports story. I shouldn't say best because there's probably something that's come out recently that'll rank up there. But this is one of the top three sports stories of the last 6 months. Because if you're Alden Smith, if you're Johnny Manziel, to a lesser degree, if you're Colin Kaepernick, two guys in the draft from Ole Miss, Laremy Tunsil and Robert Nimdichie, if you're Yasiel Puig, if you're Rolando McClain, this is the story you should be reading. Tyrann Mathieu got a second chance. This is a guy who was a Heisman finalist in 2011.
Sure.
The Honey Badger.
Honey Badger.
Everyone loved him. LSU went undefeated. They lost to Alabama in the rematch in the national championship. But the bottom line is he was a star. Took the country by storm. Everyone loved this kid. Now, during that season, he was suspended for a game. And then a year later, right before they got to camp, so much stuff took place between the drugs, the arrest. He was kicked out of school. LSU. We're not talking about Yale here or Stanford with high standards. We're talking about LSU, which will do just about anything to keep you in play so you can beat Alabama. Kicked him out before the start of the 2012 season. Mathieu misses the entire year.
Sure did.
He re-enters the draft, or he enters the draft. He goes in the third round to Arizona. Bottom line, he gets a second chance, not a fifth chance, not a tenth chance. He gets a second chance, and look at what he's done with it. 3 years with the Arizona Cardinals, he's been through a lot of adversity. 2013, tore his left ACL, I believe it was. Then at the end of last season, tore the right ACL with two games left in the year. Arizona has still been so impressed with the 3 years they've had of Tyrann Mathieu, how he stayed out of trouble, how he's become a team leader, big in the community. producer on the field in a big, big way. They rewarded him with a contract that pays more guaranteed money, $40 million guaranteed, than any safety has ever received in the history of the National Football League. This is a great bounce back story. This is the type of stuff we need to focus more on in terms of positivity. What do they always say? If it bleeds, it leads. It's always negativity on the front page. The Alden Smith thing was huge. The Johnny Manziel thing's always a big story. This is a guy who got a legitimate second chance. And I'm not just talking about screw-ups off the field. Colin Kaepernick had his issues on the field. He needs to rebrand a little bit. Yasiel Puig needs to rebrand a little bit, just sent to the minor leagues. This is a guy, Tyrann Mathieu, who got that second chance and seized it. He seized it, and this is where he's at right now. 5 years, $62.5 million. I love this story.
Wow, Joe, that was so well put. This is an awesome story. You're thinking about this and thinking about this young man, the difficulties this guy had and what he's accomplished and achieved. And I'd like to give a shout-out to a guy that we had on the show who I love is Bruce Arians, because I know Bruce Arians as a person, as a coach, as a man, and I guarantee he has spoke life into this guy's heart, into his life. I mean, you talk to Bruce, he's one of the guys that always want to give minorities coaches a chance. He's one of the coaches that brought in the first woman coach.
Progressive.
Bruce, yeah, and he is a good man. So that's kudos to Honey Badger buying in, but kudos to Bruce Arians by trying to infuse life into this young man and letting him saying, hey, look, don't let your condition dictate your position in life. That's a great story.
It is. It really is. Alden Smith's gotten, what, 5 or 6 chances? And he's going to get another one.
Yeah.
Look at Tyrann Mathieu, man. Take advantage of the situation. Realize you've made some mistakes. But the NFL, professional sports, the more you can help a team win, the more you can get away with. But at some point, just look in that mirror and realize, you know what? I don't want to squander this talent. I don't want to squander what God gave me. I don't want to squander these gifts. Not everyone's born genetically like that.
$55,000
a year scholarship, because he's worked for it. Not to take anything away from the work, but to get to that level, you've got to have size. You got to have speed. You got to have ability. He's taken advantage of every gift he's been given, and as a result, full scholarship. This is a guy who got a second chance, and he's taken full advantage. Now, from an on-field perspective, here's what Blaine Gabbert and or Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers are going up against this year in the NFC West. The Arizona Cardinals now rank as one of the top 2 teams in the National Football League in terms of guaranteed money spent on their secondary. $109.4 million guaranteed to members of their secondary. That's most in the National Football League. You know who's number 2? Seattle Seahawks, right behind them at $94.4 million.
Wow.
The 2 most expensive secondaries in the NFL are in the NFC West. For 2 quarterbacks looking to reclaim their careers, that's what you'll be facing this year in addition to Jeff Fisher's Rams. From a third perspective, I think what Tyrann Mathieu's doing is he's revolutionizing the game just a bit in conjunction with how the team is using him. He's listed as a safety, but he played 62% of his snaps last season as a slot corner, 21% at linebacker, only 12% at safety, and 5% as a wide cornerback. This is a guy who could be classified as a DW, defensive weapon. And I think you're going to see the game trending more towards players like this. Pure athletes who can be utilized in a variety of different ways.
Versatility.
Right. Baseball, you see it with the defensive shift. You don't necessarily need these teams anymore having 11 players with defined roles. It used to be you're either a 4-3 or a 3-4. Now, hybrids. And these players who have the versatility to play all over the field, like a Mathieu, are changing the game. DW, defensive weapon.
And who else picked that guy up in the draft, the Raiders this year? Safety?
Carl Joseph.
What can he do? Play safety, play in the box, play in a slot. Just what you just alluded to, Joe. He's that type of guy that can do the same things that Honey Badger does.
Look at Khalil Mack. Yep. Defensive end, outside linebacker. That dude, you can rush him from everywhere. Bruce Irvin, he's versatile in what he can do. Ben Heaney, you're going to put him in the middle, but that's a kid that can play. You want to keep an eye on that kid as well. But this is what the 49ers are going up against. But to package it all up, Tyrann Mathieu, these stories, don't let these ones slide through the cracks, because there are the good guys who get the second chances and absolutely seize them.
I'm with you. And it's guys like the Honey Badger that I pull for, because I can relate. I've been given a second chance at life after some of the mistakes I've made and the addictions I've had to battle. So when I see guys like this, and you remember all the red flags around the Honey Badger when he came out of college, people weren't sure if you should draft him. Should you take a chance on him? And then you see him and what he's been able to do, a a guy who's been active in the community, an absolute playmaker on the field, and his teammates in the locker room, they love him. His leadership, he's really growing into a nice player. So I personally love guys and stories like this because I want to pull for him.
Fantastic story. Fantastic story. And this stuff never makes the front page, and that's why I'm glad we were able to get to it today, especially at the top of the hour, because we're going to focus, especially Aldon Smith. Should they cut him? Should they keep him? You know, this is a guy who's going to get, what, here, a sixth chance? Come on, man. Come on. Take advantage of it. Like, at what point, what wake-up call do you need? What does someone need to do to slap you around, to put you in a position where you're going to realize, you know what, it's time to step up and be a man, at least to an extent. On a much smaller scale, because I don't want to compare the two, you saw what's been going on with Draymond Green this summer. It's incident after incident after incident. None of them are all that egregious. You're driving 120, doing immature things on the court, immature things, not being able to handle social media, getting in trouble in East Lansing. Look at what guys are doing. You're going to be given that second chance. People are willing to wipe the slate clean. America is all about forgiveness, but you've got to give them something in return. Show them that their investment in you, there will be a return on that investment.
It's the 4KD National Cash Contest on 95.7 The Game. You just heard the code word month. Text the code word month to 72881 before 15 past the hour for your chance to win $1,000. And be listening every day at 7, 11, 2, and 5 for your chance to win $1,000. Text message and data rates may apply. The San Francisco Giants have made changes to their rotation, but who is it going to affect the most? We'll tell you next. 712 Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:15, it is time for us to head over to the sports desk and bring in Anna. She's got today's 95.7 The Game Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by our wonderful friends from FH Daily and Novato Chevrolet.
Interesting thing happened last night. Reds and Cardinals were playing in Cincinnati, and Reds first baseman Joey Votto, he briefly engaged with a Reds fan while attempting to catch a foul ball along the first baseline, top of the seventh inning. So Votto was actually prevented from catching the ball when he made contact with the fan who was actually wearing a red shirt. And remember, they're at home, mind you. So Votto was obviously upset. He stared down at the fan, grabbed the Reds logo on the man's shirt, basically saying he's a Cincy fan, he should know better, stay out of the way. Later on, Votto did apologize, giving the fan a ball that said, thanks for being so understanding. And he also took the time to pose with the fan. So today's question, based on what happened with Votto and based on many instances in the past, do fans have an obligation to get out of the way in a game? Naked, let us know what you think on 95.7thegame.com. Polls on the right-hand side of the page. Also, go to Twitter at 957thegame. You can get involved with us here in the studio by using the hashtag TakeYourPick.
Joe, we'll start with you. Where do you come out on this? Do fans have an obligation to get out of the way in a game?
Yes, they do, because they're fans and not spectators, and that's where the distinction lies. Those are the two types of people that go to sporting events, fans and spectators. Spectators are individuals that sometimes you'll find them in the luxury suites at Oracle playoff games. They're the ones you need to remind to put the shirt on to join in with everybody else. At football games, they're a little bit more social. They're not really tuned in. They might show up maybe 30, 40 minutes before. They might not wear the gear either. It doesn't matter necessarily if you're going to wear the clothing to support the team or not, but spectators are there kind of for the environment. It's a thing to do. Fans, and we see a lot of them when we go to those Raider tailgates, Big Joe C's crew, Raider Dave, all those guys. Fans live and die with the team. Fans go to Raiders games, and when the Raiders get blown out by the Bengals in week one, they come out and they are distraught. You are emotionally affected. When they bounce back in week two and destroy Baltimore in a shootout win, you've got that extra release of serotonin in the brain because you're that fired up for the win. You live and die with the team. The fan uses the term we. We've got to get this game. We got to take this team out. The fan is at the baseball game, scoring it as it goes along, paying attention to everything. The spectator is just there to enjoy it. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the spectator, but the spectator has no obligation to get out of the way for Joey Votto. The spectator paid for that seat, and if the spectator's following the rules and not reaching onto the field, and that ball's in his zone, he has every right to go for it. The fan needs to get out of the way, because the fan wants to say we. The fan wants to get upset and bash the team when they lose. The fan wants to celebrate when they win. Do your part. If Votto's over there trying to make a play, get out of the way for him. So, yes.
Lo, what do you think? Do fans have an obligation to get the heck out of the way?
Of course. Get out of the way. Get out of the way. Without a doubt, they should get out of the way. It's a sport, and the guys that are on the field are participating, and they're getting paid. They're getting paid good money to perform. And you're paying good money to watch. So let them do their job while you do your job is to cheer and to clap and get involved with every team you're rooting for. So, yeah, get out of the way.
I would say no. And what I would like to see them do, because in a situation like that, you're at a game, and in a split second, you're supposed to be able to know what to do in that situation. I don't think most fans or spectators who go to a game know exactly what to do in that situation. I would like to see maybe a little PSA before the game. Make it clear on what you want the fans or spectators to do if a ball comes in their direction so they're better equipped to deal with it. Anna?
I think most fans know what to do because they've been watching the game for a while. I can understand if you're just a passerby who happens to be coming in just to enjoy the environment. But fans have to realize that they can affect the outcome of a game. And if foul ball is coming your way and you see one of your players coming over there and able to make the grab, let them do it. Also, my big issue is people need to pay attention at these games. If you're at a game, you need to pay attention to what's going on around you. Stop worrying about getting your own selfie where you are. Stop looking at your cell phone. Pay attention to the game and what's going on. So go to 957thegame.com to let us know what you think. Vote on the right side of page. Vote until midnight tonight. Also, go to Twitter at 957thegame and use the hashtag #TakeYourPick to get involved with all of us here in the conversation.
We have a serious problem as a society with our attachment to our cell phones.
Yes.
And you know, it's not just at sporting events, but you'll see it there. You'll be at an Oracle playoff game. You'll be at Raiders week one. You'll be down at AT&T Park for the Giants, and you've got something that you're paying for. A great atmosphere happening right in front of you. And there's this fixation that we have where we need to alert everybody to what we're doing. We need to let everyone know, hey, I'm here. I saw this at Outside Lands last year and it drove me nuts. It's Saturday night. The Black Keys are playing. The other main stage is Kendrick Lamar, right? So you have kids that are going to bounce around, try to catch both. I'm picking one and I'm just going with it. So we're at the Black Keys. And as you're there trying to enjoy the music, you'll have these. Generally, it's a little bit younger. It's early 20s, mid 20s. They come rushing in, and they fight their way as close to the stage as they can. And they get there, and they set up shop right in front of you, right? This is right in the middle of the show. And they take selfies of themselves. They take pictures of the stage. They upload it to Snapchat, to Twitter, to Instagram, to Facebook. Yep. Then they start texting and alerting everyone where they are, what they're doing, where are you, where can we meet. And this takes about 10, 15 minutes, and then you see them bolt from the crowd to go to the other stage and catch it. The whole point of what they did was to tell everyone, I'm at the Black Keys show. But they didn't actually listen to the Black Keys. Mm. And you see this happen in sporting events, too. These Roracle playoff games, people are on their cell phones. You're sitting courtside. Do you really want to do that? You can't. I'm not telling you have to put the phone down, but you're missing out on life, like real life that's happening right in front of you.
Well, I think I told you a couple of weeks ago I saw Don Henley in concert.
Yeah.
And he's really big on this where he doesn't want cell phones out. He encourages people not to have them out during the concert. He won't allow pictures to be taken or videos because – like you said, he wants people to sit back and take a couple hours to just enjoy the music.
That's why you're there, aren't you?
How about this? Last year, I was covering Fresno Grizzlies.
Fresno!
And I'm sitting on first base side, and I see this dad with a baby, little baby, like maybe a few months old at the most, back to the field and pretty close to the batter. Mm-hmm. And not paying attention at all. Somebody's taking pictures. He's like smiling for pictures. I'm sitting there thinking, you have your child in your arms. A ball can come at you any second. I've been at a game where a ball went right past somebody I was interviewing, like literally just past the ears. Another inch would have hit him in the head.
Scary.
Yeah.
You need to pay attention.
You have too much of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this game, this had nothing to do with the cell phone. We kind of got off on a tangent there, but it's a very good point. This guy right there went for the ball. I mean, it's a natural reaction.
Right.
It's easy to sit here and critique it when you're not in that spot because it's about an 8-second interaction there, and you're just going to react. I also would venture this: who were the Reds even playing last night? It's not like I'm keeping up with whatever the hell they're up to. Let's say it was the Braves.
Cardinals.
It was the Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Thanks. Yeah, it comes in 10 minutes later. Cardinals. thanks. Cardinals, right? If I'm a Cardinals fan and I'm there and it's within bounds, like I'm not leaning over, I'm making sure Votto doesn't catch that ball. I think as a fan of the other team, you have a responsibility to make sure that guy can't make that play. That doesn't mean you throw an elbow at him or interfere with him, but if he's reaching in, you go for that ball. You make sure he can't make that play. If you're on his side, you get out of the way and you let him make it. People bring up Bartman. Bartman should not have made a play on that ball because he's a fan. The problem, though, isn't that he made the play on the ball. The problem is that everybody is under the impression Bartman cost the Cubs the World Series. Those people are idiots, complete idiots. Bartman makes that play, right? So now the assumption is the inning would be over. Very next play, shortstop boots the ball. He could have closed it out. They could have closed it out in the eighth. They could have closed it out in the ninth. They could have come back in game seven and won.
Lost momentum.
The Cubs were all about, yeah, right. The Cubs were all about making excuses for being losers. Everyone, they ran this guy out of town. He had to move to Florida and give up on the team he loved more than anything else because he made a mistake. But the whole city put that on him. No one wants to blame the shortstop for botching the next play up where he could have gotten him out of the inning. No one wants to blame the fact that in game seven, I believe they had a lead that they ended up blowing. No one remembers that. They remember a guy in the fans who grabbed the foul ball.
So
that's
Cubs fans. Effect there.
You could apply that, but you said there's no such thing as the butterfly effect,
saying,
Anna.
You said
so
there
you can't bring that up now.
Ah, but you said there was.
That would make you a hypocrite.
Ah, that would make you a hypocrite.
Let's go to Sacramento, Diego. Diego, good morning. Thanks for the call. What's your take on the Joey Votto incident?
I think if I'm a fan of the opposing team, I'm making sure Joey Votto doesn't catch the ball.
Damn right.
I think it's your obligation to. If you can somehow save an out for your team, you slap the ball out of your hands. And a real fan, like, somehow supports the team in any aspect they can. Just like when Curry jumped into the stands, a real fan would have caught Curry. So that's my take on that.
Appreciate that, Diego. Thank you. See, the Warriors would have won the championship if someone would have caught Steph Curry in the Western Conference Finals.
You could make that case. I'm not saying anyone will buy it, but you can make that case.
Right.
But that's what gets tricky there. So then say you do catch him, right? And say you roll your knee up while you do it. And then it's, hey, man, you know, I was a good fan. I prevented Steph Curry from hitting the ground, but I blew my knee out. Team's going to go, well, you saw the signs when you walked in.
We're not responsible.
You were not responsible. You sit close, you get hit by a bat, that's on you. You have to be aware of flying objects. So then it's the whole, you know, if you get out of the way because you don't want to risk that injury, the fans are going to crush you for it. If you make a play and you get hurt and no one's there to help you out as a result of that, then what? You're left holding the bag for all that and all you wanted to do was be a spectator. Slippery slope with that one. But yeah, fans should get involved, man. That guy right there, that's why Votto grabbed the shirt and flicked the Cincinnati Reds thing on it. You're on the same team. Let him make the play. I mean, it's the Reds we're talking about here. Although in hindsight, him not making that play, if the Reds ended up losing that game, probably helped, and the Reds want to lose as many games as they possibly can. That's a whole other can of worms.
And these teams got insurance, so if a fan saved someone or whatever, I think they would cover them. They got the insurance. They know that things are going to happen. So I think that they would cover the fans if the fans tried to save me. They never saved me in my 16-year career. No one came out on the field and made a tackle or moved guys out of the way for I could score a touchdown on my limited opportunities to catch the ball. No one went out and caught K5 for me.
They probably would have tried to catch you on a Lambo leap if you could get up that high.
I got some hops.
But I mean, what do you say? Round,
brown, and low to the ground.
That's it, yeah. I was going to botch that thing.
Reach out to us on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line 95795. What do you think about this? Are fans obligated to get the heck out of the way? What's next for the A's after the aftermath from the trade deadline? We'll talk with Susan Slusser, 727. Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:32, our next guest. She covers the A's for the San Francisco Chronicle, and she is our insider. Susan Slusser joins Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Susan, good morning. Thanks for coming on the show. You know, Josh Reddick, after the trade, I like what he tweeted out. He says, to my people in the right field bleachers, never change. He's clearly a fan favorite, but what's been the reaction in the clubhouse from, you know, a guy that not only the fans like, but very popular with his teammates?
It was a little subdued in the A's clubhouse yesterday, and obviously Reddick is one of the few guys that has been around this team for a long time. You know, going back to the start of the 2012 season, he actually played more games in an A's uniform in that span than anyone else. So, you know, significant loss, and not just a good guy, obviously a very good, very solid all-around player. And Rich Hill, yes, he'd been sidelined, you know, a couple weeks with that blister thing, but was the A's best starter when he was healthy by far all year. So I don't think there are many teams that are really going to love coming in and seeing guys like that gone.
You know, we asked Bob Melvin right at the trade deadline, what's his approach on a day like that? He says he plugs his ears and waits for 1 p.m. to come. But, you know, with that said, what's his message to the guys now moving forward after that deal?
Well, personally, he's unhappy. You know, he's sad. basically. You know, he said it stings to lose guys like that, but he's done this drill before. Some of the older guys have done this drill before. You just have to keep playing. I mean, it's not like you have a choice. You got to keep going. And I think that there's also a message that this gives other guys opportunities. And look, at one point, these were guys who needed opportunities, and they took it and ran with it. There are other guys in this clubhouse who have done the same thing. Now it's someone else's turn, and we'll see what we've got. And for a team in the eighth position, it's probably the best thing to do. You know, get some kids up here. Brett Eibner obtained for Billy Burns the other day. He'll probably be here as soon as he's eligible next week. So we'll get a little bit of a look at him. And then Jesse Hahn comes back up tomorrow, and that's great because he looked so good his last time out in that spot start. He really deserves it. So, yeah, we'll see.
It is our A's insider, Susan Susser, with Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
Susan, who's now the face of the team? And when you think about this team, even when a couple years back when they were making a playoff, when they still traded a guy when they had a chance. But how was kind of the thought process of Billy Beane, even when the team was, you know, in 2012, making that run, still traded a prominent, a good player? How does it, what's the thought process behind that? And then, you know, moving forward, why couldn't a contract get done for this guy? You still could have had rights to him if they would have signed him to a 1 year after last year, next year rather.
Well, I'm assuming you're mentioning the Cespedes deal of a couple years ago when they were going for it. That was, the only way they felt like they could get Lester. I don't know if that's something they would – obviously, it's not something you would do when you're not in contention. But, you know, I think they felt like they needed more pitching to be able to get deeper in the playoffs, and it wound up backfiring. But that was a go for it. This is obviously just a we can't get the extensions done. And it came down to years for Reddick. You know, the A's were offering 3. He wanted 4. And I think there just wasn't any budging off of that for either side. That happens in negotiations. It's too bad. The A's, a lot of their long-term deals, the second they get signed, the player seems to get hurt. And it has been the ones that are 3 or 4 years or longer. It also starts to get a lot tougher to get insurance the longer you do a deal for. So, that's one reason the A's won't do it, but that history, you look at from Eric Chavez to Bobby Crosby to Brett Anderson to even a guy like Kurt Suzuki, who'd been healthy up to that point, Sean Doolittle now, Coco Crisp now, the A's are a little leery of doing longer-term deals. But they love Reddick. Reddick loves them. I think their relationship is permanently over. I don't think they go back for him in the winter, but I do think Rich Hill will be a target for them this winter.
Susan, all things considered, Reddick appeared to be the guy that if you were ever going to give an extension to anybody as an Oakland Athletic, he'd be it. Not just because of what he's meant and done for the team, but it was also fairly reasonable price, that 3 versus 4 years. This wasn't a guy seeking an absurd contract. By baseball standards, with his age and production figured in, it seemed fairly reasonable. So for the A's to go ahead and move Reddick and not get something done, is there any reason for an Oakland A fan at all to believe that this team will keep Sonny Gray past his expiration date in terms of team control? Is there any reason to believe that they're ever going to spend money on any marquee player that the fans love?
Well, remember, those numbers are from spring training. They are not from recently. They had not had talks. The closer a guy gets to free agency, he's not going to be giving a team-friendly deal. You do that when you want to make sure that you've got the you know, the guarantee and all of that. But with, you know, 2 months to go before free agency, there's no way he was going to be going anything but up with those numbers, and rightly so. But, yeah, you know what? I think the A's will probably at some point entertain a long-term extension talks with Marcus Semien. He's the guy I would pick. He, unlike Reddick, who, let's be for a little bit for the A's, has been on the DL a lot. Marcus Semien plays every day. He's starting to look a little run down. That's a separate topic. But, you know, the improvement he's made, the work he's done, he's local, all of that, I think that they should go after him. I would obviously love to see them extend Sonny Gray. This would be a great time to do that. He's in a down season. I'm sure he would probably be willing to talk about something reasonable. That might be a little farther fetched because obviously pitchers are such an injury risk.
Of the three pitchers that came in from the Reddick and Hill deal, which of the three should A's fans get the most excited about?
Well, Graham Holmes, ultimately, it's harder to say that initially because he's 20 and he's in the Cal League, so it's going to be a little bit of a wait. But he's a special talent. I ate dinner with a bunch of scouts last night, some of whom had seen him real recently in the Cal League, and they raved about him. I mean, he's legit. Big kid, throws pretty hard, has two major league pitches right now, and was a first rounder. As an exec I talked to the other day made the point, like, look, if at the end of the season – Reddick and Hill walk, the best DAs get for them is about a number 40 pick as a comp pick if they make them qualifying offers. This kid was a first-round pick, and he's pitching well, and he looks great. So you already know you're ahead of the game there in getting that kid. But I think we could see Jarrell Cotton sometime this month or next. He's close to big league ready and probably is. And then Frankie Montas. He's the wild card. He throws 100, which is great. We don't see that in Oakland very often. But he's got a rib cage injury. He's coming back from that.
On Twitter, at Susan Slusser, our A's insider from the San Francisco Chronicle. Susan Slusser with Chad, Joe Law, 95.7 The Game. Thank you, Susan. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Very nice. Very nice.
She was gone. At least she hung up.
That was quick. Well, on the bright side, Chris Davis, another bomb last night, 27 on the year.
Yeah, real bright side. Thanks. Brutal, man. Absolutely brutal. Thank God that for a lot of the A's fans, they cross over with the Raiders. So you can just go ahead and start getting excited about football season.
Yeah.
Just move it on because the organization has let you know full on. We're not contending this season in case there was any misconception leading into the trade deadline.
And the good thing about the A's fans, and I think they know we're sympathetic to their needs and what, you know, what the frustrations you have as an A's fan because the way that Billy Beane does, the way he goes about his trading, the way that he goes through his process, it's still not refreshing. And at the same sense, you understand that these fans are still going to be fans. They're loyal. A's fans are so – they're just like the Raiders fans. They're loyal, even though sometimes it doesn't seems a little gleary and seems a little dark at times for their organizations. But one thing about these fans, these A's fans, they love their A's.
They're pissed at ownership,
yeah.
And they should be.
Yeah.
Because the owners don't try to win. The owners try to turn a profit, and that's understandable. I get the business side of it.
Right.
They're smart. They found a couple, I don't want to say loopholes, but they found a couple angles where they've been able to turn a profit and do a nice job as a business.
Yeah.
The problem is the fans don't want to hear that it's a business.
Right.
The fans want to hear that the business is winning,
right,
and that the winning will bring the revenues you seek out.
Sure.
That's what we've all been led to believe since we were younger. There's amateur sports, and then there's professional sports. And when it comes to professional sports, the more you win, the more money you make. That's not necessarily the case in baseball. There are ways that you can keep the payroll short, real short, then capitalize on some of those luxury taxes. The A's have figured out how to do that. But you can't sell that concept. You can't sell that model to a fan base. They are not interested in hearing, well, we're doing everything we can to turn a profit. They want to hear, we're doing everything we can to win games.
Yasiel Puig moved to AAA Oklahoma City. Josh Reddick batted cleanup for the Dodgers last night in his L.A. debut, 0-for-4. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out for him in L.A. with the Dodgers. We got more on baseball coming up next hour, 8:30. We'll talk with Javier Lopez. He'll be live from Philadelphia as the Giants begin their long road trip last night in Philly against the Phillies. And pound-for-pound king of the ring, Andre Ward, going to stop by at 8:15. Well, the 49ers, first day in pads yesterday, and that quarterback competition is heating up. Who's got the edge? We'll go to Low Neal next. 7:42, Chad, Joe, and Low, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Low on 95.7 The Game.
7:46, the 49ers, first day in pads yesterday. Their quarterback competition is heating up. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Colin Kaepernick or Blaine Gabbert? Here is what Trent Baalke had to say. Both Colin and Blaine, we're going to roll out the ball and give them the equal opportunity. That's really up to the coaches. When they get reps, how they share reps, I don't have anything to do with that, nor do I want anything to do with that. Now, Lo, we've talked about this quarterback battle at length over the course of several months. What's your reaction to what you hear there from Trent Baalke?
I think it's a good reaction. I mean, last time around, Trent Baalke and, you know, the powers that be sometimes meddled a little bit. Hardball was running an operation, meddled in that. When you're a GM, your job as a GM is to give the head coach the players he need to be successful. And that's your job. And right now he's saying the right thing. He's saying, look, That's on Chip Kelly. And Chip Kelly's saying the right thing. He goes, look, both these guys are going to have the opportunity to compete. In OTAs, Colin wasn't really able to, he can only do a certain amount of things. So you had to give him the edge. You had to give the edge, not to Colin, because he wasn't able to compete really in OTAs. He was limited in certain things. So Blaine Gabbert had the edge. Now Colin's released to do everything. And Trent's saying the right thing. And Trent's saying the right thing. And so is the head coach. He's like, look, I'm going to let these guys compete. And I'm living them equal amount of opportunities to throw the ball, run with the ones, because he wants to go into the season knowing the quarterback is he's going to use moving forward that is his, not necessarily his guy, because neither one of these guys, I don't think, is guys. But he needs to find out which guy is going to run with the ones, how they're going to do it, how they're going to split the role, how they're going to share the opportunity. He's got to find out what he has in Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick.
I think Chip, Trent, and everyone else who's opened their mouth and said anything over the last week or so has done a remarkable job, because somehow, some way, they have convinced not only the national media, but they're starting to convince local media that this is actually a competition. This is what's confusing me. This was Gabbert as the front runner from the get-go. From the second Chip Kelly showed up, when everyone was dissecting his words at the press conference, what he said about Blaine versus what he said about Kaepernick, right? All the way up until now, we've heard nothing to believe that this was going to be a battle, except for the last week with the, hey, look, it's a quarterback battle. This is how we're going to do things. We're going to split the reps down the middle. And that's what you should say. Politically, that's the right move. But people are actually buying into the fact that this is a quarterback battle. I'm almost getting tripped up in my own head. I made this bet yesterday with Jason McIntyre from The Big Lead, right? Great dude. He's on that FS1 show with Cowherd and Whitlock.
Right.
And his website had an article about how this specific topic of conversation, talking about how are you going to leave $12 million on the bench? How are you going to go with Blaine Gabbert? We all saw him in Jacksonville. We saw him at the end with the Niners last season. He's not that good. I kept thinking to myself, man, what is the national perspective? Because here locally, I've been convinced that Blaine Gabbert's going to be the starter, at least in week one. Now, this is all to assume there will be no injuries or any sort of freak act of God that gets in the way here. Two guys stay healthy. They have their battle. It's Gabbert. But now people are starting to fall in line to this. It's going to be Kaepernick. I really don't see it. I think that the administration has done a real nice job with the lip service to the media. I think they've gotten this message out there to convince everyone that it is actually an open quarterback competition. But the bottom line, I believe Blaine Gabbert has the edge. Yep. I believe Blaine Gabbert will have the edge in game one. He will have a better opportunity to work with the starters. I think that'll steamroll in the game two. And before you know it, he's starting week one against St. Louis.
I agree with you.
See, in my mind, you know, I thought, you know, if you roll both those guys out and give an equal opportunity based on what we've seen in the past, I just figured that Colin Kaepernick, with his ability and what he can do, I thought he would be the natural winner of the competition. But over time, you guys have flipped me, because you guys know the football well, and you've talked about the situation with his contract. They tried to make a deal. I didn't think it was going to be a fair shake. I mean, Lo, do you think this is going to be a fair shake for both guys?
I just think that the head coach is doing a phenomenal job of saying, hey, this is open competition. He can't hit you. He's the head coach. He's going to be there for 5 years. Chip Kelly's doing a great job of saying, look, this is open competition. I'm going to let these guys battle. You should say that. Why would you hit your wagon to either one of these guys when neither one of these guys are going to be necessarily your future quarterback?
Well, look at Philadelphia. Their situation is Sam Bradford's our guy. Right. Everyone knows Bradford's not going to be the guy. But in that situation, you come out and you make it very clear from the beginning, Sam Bradford's the guy.
Sure.
Carson Wentz is the rookie. He's got a long way to go. So there are different approaches that could be taken. They could come out and say, Blaine Gabbert's the guy. Remember, Blaine Gabbert was here through the entire offseason program. Blaine Gabbert's the first one in the building every day, puts in a ton of work, had the little session down at San Jose State with the receivers. By all accounts, Blaine Gabbert has done far more than Colin Kaepernick this offseason, who was limited by three surgeries, which for some reason were pushed off rather than held right away, and hasn't been around for the things like what happened at San Jose State because he's been in Colorado getting cleared. So by all accounts, if Chip were to come out at the beginning and say, Blaine is our starter, but we're very interested to see what Colin can do, that would have been an acceptable approach too, in my opinion.
But go ahead.
Yeah, real quick, I think when you look at what Chip Kelly did coming out, he said that I get to see Blaine. He looks good. I'm surprised by his athletic ability. So he was giving Blaine the lead. Why? Because Colin couldn't practice. Hmm. So I thought the head coach handled that magnificent, to saying, look, Blaine's showing, wow, he's eager to learn. I like the guy. He's the first one in. He's doing all this stuff. So, yeah, Blaine right now, Blaine looks like he's ahead of the competition. That's what Chip Kelly said in OTAs. Now you have healthy Colin Kaepernick, and now he's like, hey, look, we're going to let these guys compete. Even though that Blaine is probably the guy, I think that you need to, because you don't want Colin to come out there just knowing that he's the number two. You want to give this guy an hope and the illusion that, hey, he can come in here and push, because he might show you some amazing things and like, oh, my God, this guy can play. Oh, he can fit this system. And that way, when you do make that transition, because you talked about it, I think Blaine Gabbert is going to start. But if he struggles, you're playing against the Rams. You got a tough, tough gauntlet. You can say the competition was close. We're going to give Colin an opportunity to play.
What is it like? You've been through these things before on teams going through a quarterback battle. Give us some insight. What's the chatter right now in the clubhouse with the guys? What are they saying? What's going on? Do you have pockets where you have guys who support one player or the other? How does that work?
Well, you're going to have guys, and guys like, man, you had a good day of practice. And Colin has his guys. Blaine has guys. And guys, they want the best guy to play. And they want the guy that they feel comfortable with in the huddle. And it's just a matter of, hey, which quarterback is being assertive? Which one is making guys feel like they're giving them the best opportunity to be successful? And that's how you look at it. They know that they're looking, watching. Guys are watching practice saying, man, that was a good throw by Colin. Man, this is heating up. And guys know going in, they're like, oh, what quarter are you getting, Colin? They're going to ask them. I mean, it's open competition. The guys want to know. The media's coming in. Guys, oh, who looks better to you? Guys are going to sit back and they're going to say the right things. They're going to say the politically correct things. Man, we don't know who's going to. Both of these guys look good. We just want to win and get better. So, of course, guys are looking at it. But there's no divided locker room and half the guys are sitting over here with Blaine, half of them sitting over with Colin. No. Guys are trying to worry about making their own team, making the job and doing their job. They're not worried. They are watching it, but they're not buying it.
Well, you've told me
I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you're Colin Kaepernick, if you're in Colin Kaepernick's camp, if you're a fan of Colin Kaepernick, you don't want him winning this starting job. You want Blaine Gabbert to win it for a very simple reason. Let Blaine Gabbert take this new look offense with no real-time reps in the regular season under their belt. Let him take the reins for week one against a tough Rams defense on Monday night. Week two at Carolina, defending NFC champs, nasty defense. Week three at Seattle, the worst place on earth to go try to get a win. Then come home and let him play a home game against Dallas and see if he can get his feet wet there. And then when all of it fails and you've set it up perfectly so that there's absolutely no one left that says Blaine Gabbert is the man of the future, then you pull the plug because the fans will at this point have been spending 2 to 3 weeks calling for Colin Kaepernick. Now suddenly you've turned Colin Kaepernick into the hero. He hasn't played a damn snap since last year when he was booed off the field. Booed off the field.
Yep.
His PR rating will do a complete 180. Okay. Everyone will be cheering for him to take the field. He'll come out. It'll be highly anticipated. They'll talk about it on SportsCenter. This team could be 0-4, and they'll be talking about Colin Kaepernick stepping into Chip Kelly's offense. And he'll have avoided the road game at Carolina, the road game at Seattle. The rest of the offense will already have had time to figure out Chip's system so they can hit the ground running. More favorable schedule, like I said. And by that point, maybe Anthony Davis has worked his way into the starting lineup because he's running with the third team. Maybe Josh Garnett, the rookie from Stanford, he's running with the third team right now. By that point, he's up to speed and up and running. You'll have better talent around you. Jerome Simpson looks to be having a good training camp so far. It's very early. Maybe he shows you something. But at that point, you're in a better situation to succeed 4 weeks down the road. From a team perspective, you're not. You're going to be losing. But if you want Colin Kaepernick to win the job, if you want him to be the guy, if you want him to have a chance, he's got to get his confidence back. The best way to do that is to have the fans rooting for him after the offense has been a disaster through Carolina and through Seattle.
7:55, Chad Jones, Low, 95.7 The Game. Low, you've told me before, you know, that the tape don't lie. What, by the time that camp is over, will the players know, based on what they've seen on the practice field and on the tape, who the better quarterback is?
Yeah, they will. I mean, they're going to see the tape. They're going to be in meetings. And not just on the field. It's that intellectual property when you're in classrooms, when you're in the meetings, seeing how quarterbacks lead. That's what players want to get behind a leader, but they also want to get behind someone they have confidence in. And I think that when you got to look at Colin didn't have he did not have a lot of confidence and didn't have a lot of support last year during his season. So I hope he's building himself and building his character and building his gravitas in that locker room. That's what he needs to be working on.
95.7 The Game is live from Raiders training camp in Napa all week. Tune in for behind-the-scenes coverage and everything you need to know about your silver and black this season. 95.7 The Game's coverage of Raiders training camp is brought to you by Evergood Sausages. The AP released their all-time college football top 25. Let the debate begin. We'll tell you who's number one next. 7:57, Chad Joe and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.